All right, folks, this is Todd Wilson with the Lane 8 BMX podcast. And I would have to say I have one of the most well-known, outside of the pros, one of the most well-known folks in BMX. And that is Alfonso Gigante, better known as AKA Papa G. And I understand, Papa, you're from St. Louis?
Yes, sir. Yeah, born and raised in St. Louis.
Not bad, not bad. Okay, you're a real estate agent. Yes. Tell me this. The first thing I want to ask you tonight is this. Health-wise, how are you doing?
Well, thank you for asking, Todd. Every day I'm getting better and better. It's been a long journey so far. You know, it's been 3.5 months, I guess, since the accident. And 3 surgeries, put my bones back together. I'm finally off crutches. I'm walking on my own. I've even taken the bike out a little bit. I even rode the track on a big wheeled bike. I'm not where I was, but, you know, the surgeons didn't even think I'd ride a bike again, let alone they weren't even sure if I'd walk again. So, and of course, we're BMXers. We don't listen to them anyway. You know,
I love the attitude.
Yeah. So little by little, getting better. I'm very optimistic. You know, don't know what the outcome will be, but I'll take whatever comes my way.
Okay, if you don't mind me asking, I want to go back to that day. And I don't want to talk about the controversy and all that. I just want to talk about what happened to you. Can you take me through the moment that you knew, this is not good?
Sort of, yeah. So, because it happened so fast. So, you know, last moto of the night, last moto of the season, of the year, national championship. I was kind of discombobulated on points because I had a busy work year. So I only had 3 nationals in, but I still was, you know, I was going for podium and, you know, the whole gate was lined up with superstars. So really, as you look across that gate, anybody could win. Really, there was just, it's mega loaded as our age group always is with Hall of Famers, just outstanding riders. And so, all through qualifying rounds, I was getting great gates, great motos. For some reason in mains, cruiser, and then in class, which is where the accident happened, I wasn't getting out as well. I don't know what was going on, but I was having so much fun, I didn't care. Yeah. Going into turn one, I got pinched. You can hear Jim Riley on the announcer, oh, Papa G got pinched. And I'm like, yeah, I sure did. So I'm in the pack, but I knew I had been running second straight really fast, and I was gaining ground. I did in cruiser. I entered the first turn in cruiser in last place, and exited turn 2 in 4th place. Wow. So I knew I had some really good momentum. So I started the charge. I was in the pack. Maybe I was like 6th place coming down the second straight. And so I just started charging and I could feel my momentum. Yeah. And it was just classic, Todd. I was just flying and then on my head that fast. And, you know, you tumble and you're on the ground. And I'm like, okay, I crashed. Had no idea what happened. Don't know what caused it. And, you know, I'm on the ground.
Okay. From that crash, you're eventually in an ambulance. You're heading to a hospital.
Yeah.
When you get to the hospital, what's going through your mind? Because obviously you're in a bit of pain. What's going through your mind when you're in that ambulance heading to the hospital?
Yeah. So I'll back up to when I hit the ground.
Yes, sir.
We automatically go, okay, I know I got hurt. And I wasn't in a great pain, but I reached down to my leg and I could feel, because I broke both bones, I could feel the fibula sticking out, not like out through the skin, but just a bulge. And I told the corner workers who were there, like, I mean, God bless our volunteers at the track. They were like on me, like right away. And I'm like, broke my leg, don't move me. So they got a backboard, you know, got me over to the tent. And props to Jackie from Blue Springs. Yeah. She held my leg still because when it moved, it was hurting. She held my leg still for 45 minutes waiting for the ambulance to come back because the ambulance had just left from another injury. And so she sat there just holding my leg the whole time. And I wasn't like in excruciating pain, but it's uncomfortable, you know. But, you know, people kept coming to the tent. Hey, I hope you're okay. Yeah. You know, as I was getting carted off the track, a team from my hometown track, one of my hometown tracks at St. Peter's, Bikes for the Likes of His team, they stayed in the bleachers until I was fully off the track cheering for me. It was amazing. So you don't feel that pain of getting hurt. You know, it's just, it's what we sign up for. We know it's going to happen sooner or later. And it wasn't my first time getting hurt. And so, you know, they get me in an ambulance. They drove 15 miles an hour to the hospital so I wouldn't get jarred around and moved. They were awesome.
That was awesome. Okay. Yeah. You get to the hospital and they assess you. You hear what's wrong with you. Papa G, you got to tell me what's going through your mind, because I don't know how I would have handled it.
Well, it was kind of a crazy experience at the hospital, because it was really funny. Nurses kept coming in and it was like, what's going on? And they're like, well, we see on the printout, you know, your birth date and BMX accident, and we got to come in to see it for ourselves because we don't believe it. And they're like, are you really that old? I'm like, yeah, man, we're getting it. And so they were very accommodating. And so I was very distracted. I was a little bit of pain, but very distracted. You know, did x-rays. And I think it was that night, or it was the next morning, where one of the surgeons came in and goes, hey, look, this is really bad. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And he goes, no, this is like really, really bad. And I'm like, okay, but do you want me to like start screaming in pain or, you know, complaining?
Yeah,
it is what it is. And so they were really concerned, and it, you know, it did get my attention. But again, I've had situations where, you know, they say you're hurt. And like last year's grands, I showed up with a broken collarbone 3 weeks old and made mains in cruiser. So, you know, we're kind of used to that. And so I just was like, okay, it's bad. You know, all right, let's get me fixed. And so they were concerned.
Okay. When did you get home to St. Louis?
So the accident happened Sunday night at Grands. Surgery was Monday morning at seven in the morning. They like did what's called an external fixator. They like screw posts in your bones and then have rods on the outside to hold it all stable, which killed all pain. I was like, I woke up and I was completely at peace. Matter of fact, I was not even awake 30 minutes and Old School came down to visit me. It was awesome. Wow. Old School. Such an awesome dude. And so they got me back up. I had to show them that I could use crutches. And yeah. I went home that night.
Real that quick?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I left Monday. If not, I left Tuesday morning. It's, you know, it's so far back. But I left pretty quickly because they wanted to keep me and then do the major surgery. But they didn't know it wasn't from Tulsa. So I'm like, no, I'll go see my doctors in St. Louis. So I was home, I guess it was Tuesday. I stayed Monday and I came home Tuesday afternoon. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious, what is your rehab? How severe was that? Did you have to have any? You had two other surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been bad. Can you tell me what is your how would you say your physical therapy to get better?
So yeah, so they plated me up and screwed and all that stuff. And, you know, so some of the things that I realized as I was starting to heal is like when they put those metal rods in.
Yes, sir.
I couldn't lift my foot up. It was like just hanging down. I could push, but I couldn't lift. So I'm like, okay, there goes competitive pedaling if that doesn't come back. And they're like, you know, hey, it may come back. It may not. We don't know. Just deal with it. You know, the surgery was the day after Christmas that they screwed everything back together. I had to have one more surgery about a month ago because all that hardware there causes infection sometimes. And of course, that happened to me. Yeah. But 2 weeks ago, basically, they said, OK, your stitches are out. What do you want to do? We can make you weight bearing. And I just said, hey, look, let's skip all of the 20% weight bearing, 50% weight bearing. I just want to walk. And then they got to know me by then. They're like, just go ahead. And so they had been, you know, I've been doing a range of motion exercises and stuff like that, but I couldn't do anything strengthening. And so now I'm actually walking without crutches for 2 weeks. I can't do anything in the gym with my right leg because the knee is still really stiff from all the scar tissue. Yeah. But, you know, I'm starting to get back at it, starting to move around a little better.
Are you having, it's kind of funny, like withdrawal feelings of not being able to race.
Oh my gosh. Totally. I mean, every time Nationals on, I can't even watch it live because I'm like, oh man, I could have been in there. I mean, so-and-so and so-and-so is racing. I'd be like on there to, you know, and yeah. And as a matter of fact, we just had a National a couple weeks ago, about 4 hours from here in Springfield, Missouri.
Yep.
And Old School threatened me that if I even showed up in the building, he'd have me removed because he knew I'd try to jump on a bike and try to race. But it's it was better for me to just catch up afterwards, watch the highlights. Yeah, it's tough not being in it. But, you know, I've accepted my role is to get better, to heal.
Yes, sir.
Of course, I push it like anybody, any athlete does. But I think I've accepted the role pretty well that it might be a while.
Yeah. I'm curious about the outpouring of people sending you support, because I saw it all over the place. That's got to make you feel good.
Oh, my gosh. A tremendous amount. I mean, when it happened, my phone blew up for the next 3-4 days. You know, social media, how are you? We're pulling for you. You know, we know you'll be back in 3 weeks. And, you know, because they know how nutty I am with injuries. And so, yeah, everybody checking on me, all the local racers, even out-of-town racers are calling and say, hey, you need me to come up there? I'll drive up. And luckily, I have family here in St. Louis. And so it was really good. I had plenty of support here, but it was, as you would expect, the BMX community is so amazing.
Yes.
I brag about it all the time to my non-BMX friends. They don't get it, but it truly was amazing response. Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit. I'm curious a little bit about your history, because I want to get to something about you starting a track and the things that you're doing there. But I want to touch on some of your history in BMX. When did you start? Because I see some old bikes behind you. When did you start racing, and what was it that got you into the racing?
Yeah. Okay. So as a kid growing up, I grew up in the city of St. Louis where there weren't a lot of kids. I wanted a motorcycle. My dad said, no way, you know, injury with a friend of his. So, you know, then I was like, okay, I don't know what triggered it, but I wanted a motocross bike because we were jumping Swim Stingrays.
Yeah.
But I wanted a motocross bike. And, you know, St. Louis, I think it was probably 74 when I got my first motocross bike, which was like a department store bike. And I went through the evolution of that, of, you know, get to the next bike, then was like a Yamaha full suspension. I think that you can see it back behind me.
I do.
You know, big, heavy thing. Never raced it, but I actually had an empty lot next to my house and made a little track. And that's all I knew. And it wasn't until I think it was 78. Where one of the neighborhood kids said, hey, we saw a flyer at the bike store. They're having a race. It was an NBL track called Bonsai in Bridgeton, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis. Do you want to go? And I'm like, I'm in. Let's go. And I actually, believe this or not, I went on a Mongoose with Motomax. I didn't have a red line yet. And so my very first race was on a Mongoose with Motomax. And you can imagine the looks I got, because the kids there were all on like bikes with alloy wheels and stuff. And they're like, What the heck, dude? But from that day, I was hooked. We found another track that was an ABA track called Plantation, which was a really famous track. And, you know, just started going through the process. And of course, going to bike shops, you know, and I might be getting ahead of myself, but going to bike shops, I saw a Redline Proline in the window. And, you know, I'm riding a $159 Mongoose, and I saw this bike for $500 or $600. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And, you know, I couldn't stop my focus of that was going to be my next acquisition to raise my racing game. And within several months, I worked like 3 jobs over the summer, and then I got my red line. Yeah. So, so it was a weird start, because I hung around kids that weren't really doing it. We were in the city, and a lot of the kids that raced were in the county and probably had been racing for at least 2 years. So I was like completely out of the loop at the time.
Tell me this, what was the racing scene like back then?
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Man, it was really cool. So Missouri's got some pretty cool, famous riders, you know, at the ABA track where I went, you know, because at the NBL track, I barely remember anything. But the ABA track, I was there quite a bit more. And we had the likes of like John Pyant, who was factory DG, then factory Huffy. I mean, he was pro, you know, he's Hall of Famer now. We had some other guys that was, let's see, Bob Hunt, who was Factory Cook Brothers. Yep. We had this this other, hopefully soon to be Hall of Famer, Paul Gosrow, the Goose, who at 14 beat Stu Thompson in a pro open in St. Louis. Wow. Spectacular. The kid was an animal. So we had some really cool racers that I looked up to. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, when I was like a novice or, you know, maybe just turn expert, watching these guys just totally tear up the track. But, you know, unfortunately, and again, I'm moving through it quickly. I turned 16 and I got the fumes. I got a car, got a girlfriend. And I was like, I'm done. I was going to the drag strip race in my car and, you know, going out with girls. And regrettably, I hung up the bike at 16 years old. That was 1981. So I raced about 3 years. Yeah. So I raced as an amateur from 78 to 81. Some of the guys I was racing with ended up turning pro. And I just went on about my way and went on to my, did track and field and did other things. And, you know, never thought I'd look back to BMX.
Wow. Okay. You said something. You made me go back to my childhood. You said something about, you said a company, Cook's Brothers.
Yeah.
God, who remembers that? Holy. Well,
you know, it's funny because here in the Midwest, you barely saw them because it was a Santa Ana, California based company. And it was like, you know, boutique, bougie, super fine, just like the catch meow of BMX. Of course, in my eyes, once I had my red line pro line, which I still have, by the way, there was nothing other that would compare. I didn't even care. But, you know, Cook Brothers was just like, that was maybe almost double what the red line was at the time. They were insanely expensive and amazing bikes. Yeah.
Okay. So high school, you drop BMX.
Yeah.
From let's say graduation until getting back into BMX, what was life like for Papa G?
Well, I was I did get into racing road bikes because I thought that was the next thing. As some went to mountain biking, I went to road biking just from a circle of friends. I had to stay on a bicycle. You know, it was in my blood. And so that, you know, got married, had a whole truckload of kids. I have 6 children, 3 boys, 3 girls, which that's how I got back into BMX. As they started getting older, my oldest daughter, who ended up never racing, said, "Dad, I want to see what you did. I want to try BMX racing." She saw like a Disney special about 2 girls that race BMX.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right. And I'm online and I'm finding bikes and I'm getting a couple bikes and looking up the local track, which is St. Peter's BMX. St. Louis had one track at the time. This is 05. And so, you know, the Gigante clan tracked out there and, you know, unloaded the van. And I think within 2 weeks I was racing again.
Wow. Okay. So then let me ask you this. From the time that you quit at 16 to going back in 2005, obviously you saw the difference in BMX. What was the biggest difference for you and what was hardest and easiest to get used to?
So definitely the tracks were way different, way more chock full of obstacles. And, you know, I think I realized it, but I didn't really realize there was a big difference until one of my first races. I had just gotten a brand new red line flight. And back in the day, you kick the handlebars perpendicular to the ground. So I get in the gate with my handlebars like that. And a dude looks over and goes, "Hey, pull your bars back." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "We don't do that anymore. It's a different bike." And that's when I started realizing, okay, BMX has really changed besides all the different brands and the, you know, gadgets. And you don't have to have, at the time, you didn't have to have the big pads. Or it was just getting ready to get rid of them. You know, there were some differences, but I was so excited to be on the track. You know, the obstacles being so many more of them was just exciting for me.
Yeah.
But that was the one thing that that guy said that I'm like, man, I don't know what I used to know about BMX. I better take a step back and like really see what's going on. And I think like a week or two later, I had a bad crash and knocked myself out.
God. Okay. Let me ask you this. Did you clip in right away?
No, I didn't. And that's what's crazy because I was riding clipless pedals on my road bikes, on my mountain bikes.
Yeah.
But I came back with flats because I wasn't really comfortable at the gate.
Okay.
You know, getting up and balancing and hold it.
Yeah,
I actually waited a year and a half before I started riding clipless pedals on my BMX bike.
Wow. So 2005, how old are you at that time?
40. Yeah, 40. I just turned 40. Yeah.
Not a bad time to actually come back, not a bad age.
Yeah, but keep in mind, though, at that time, the age group, the oldest age group was 36 and over. So I was already on the outlier of that age group.
Okay. Yeah. And you got young guys, too.
Right. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. So I and weird enough, I was out for so long. I came back as a novice, which was really good. Yeah. Which was actually really good because I had speed, but my skills were terrible.
Yeah.
But I needed to move up quickly because it was very sketchy racing. And so I moved to intermediate pretty quickly, which was a little bit cleaner racing. And then, of course, I was so involved with all my kids racing, managing that, I didn't really focus really hard on racing at anything more than a local or state level.
Yeah. So how many of your kids still race?
None.
Are you serious?
So my kids were also diving at the time, springboard and tower diving. And a couple of them got full ride scholarships. So they had to, you know, as it was getting to that point, their coaches are like, you got to pick a sport. You're getting hurt in BMX. And there were some good riders. And my middle son was the last one to be in the sport. And he traveled with me until like 2015 or 2016. But he started to go to pilot school. And so that was the end of that. I said, no more. You know, if you hurt your hands, you're out of a job. So, you know, he's, I don't know if you're familiar with the gladiators at the Grands, the side hack team, the gladiators.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
my son, the pilot. And yeah,
that's me. Are you me serious? And
my son. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't get there this year. But because they canceled it and then brought it back. And so he couldn't make it, but we did it probably 5 years or we won a couple years. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
Wow. Yeah. So we do that. That's kind of cool. So yeah. So none of the kids race anymore. But two of my grandchildren, one's on a push bike and one races intermittently. He's 12 now, but you know, they're into other sports. So it's like not the same. Yeah. It's all good.
But Papa G still races. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Having a blast for sure.
Okay. Tell me this. Coming back in 2005, what teams were you on? And then how did you get the connection with Redline?
Okay. Yeah. So when I came back, I was like super privateer. You know, I would pretty much wrangling my kids and then, you know, staying under one tent and, you know, coming back from a race and getting bombed with questions and can't catch my breath. That was enough for me. Plus I had two nephews with me. We had a whole clan. Wow. And I don't think it was till 2014 that local legend here, you know, in St. Peter's track, Scary Terry Scott, he and I became pretty good friends and he pulled me on their team, which was called SRT.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right, I didn't really care if I was on a team, but I liked him so much and we became travel buddies. I'm like, what the hell, let's go. And so I jumped on that team and that became SRT Redline around 2015. Redline and I started talking quite a bit. And so they co-sponsored our team. And then I think it was around 2017 or 18. I can't remember the exact years because they had dropped Sam and Elise because of corporate stuff and stopped the factory program. They brought it back and brought on Big Daddy Eric Roop, which, I mean, can you get a more vetted, like legend? Which
I agree.
I mean, I was kind of hoping it had been me, but I mean, come on, it's Eric Roop. And so just the back of his jersey, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like all his stats. It's like you can't compete. But he and Hunter Pelham were going to be the factory riders. I think that lasted for about a year and a half. And so I was like a co-sponsored rider and I started like doing social media for them and promos and, you know, giving out T-shirts and little stuff. And working with the marketing team. And then it was probably 2019 or 2020 where we decided that I would just be Redline Bicycles. And, you know, we didn't really call it factory team. We just said, I ride for Redline Bicycles. And so that's when it kind of just like evolved and became a thing. And I just was always talking to sales and marketing and what can I do? I love the brand. And so I would think of different promos to do and just have fun. And we just had a blast with it. And we still do.
Would you say you're a brand ambassador?
That's one of the titles they had given me before we had some type of formal agreement was you're our brand ambassador. Because I said, hey, look, people keep drilling me and they think either that I work for Redline, because I was always doing videos. Hey, Papa G, Redline Bicycles. And I'm like, no, you know, and then they're like, oh, you're a factory rider. I'm like, not really. And they're like, yeah, you are. You've got the jersey, blah. I'm like, well, I don't really care what the label is. I know who I am and what I do and my passion for them and the brand. But we finally, now it's in, you know, in riding what I do for them. And I still just say I ride for Redline Bicycles. I don't really, it's full factory. I mean, it's such a gray area anymore because the bicycle industry has changed so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, COVID really messed up a lot of manufacturing, and it did affect, at the time, the parent company of Redline was, at the time, Axel Group, and now it's Alta Cycling. And just a lot of weird shifts happened that really, really hurt the bicycle industry. And so I don't press them hard to have a label. Like I said, I know who I am. I know what I represent. I enjoy representing them as a brand. And it's, you know, something from back when I was 13 years old. And it's just so cool. Yeah.
Well, then let me ask you this. What are the bikes that you ride?
Yeah. So my cruiser is a Redline Proline Pro 24. And they stopped making the flights in 2017. So I ride the Proline, which is an up-spec'd version of what it used to be. It's light, it's fast, it's stiff. You know, I've got some goodies on there, but it's funny you say that. And I'm a breakaway before I go to my 20 inch about my cruiser. It's funny that, what are you riding? Because I had this idea that I had been mulling over for a while, and I pitched it to Redline like in 2022. I said, you know, I want to go to the track with an entry level. It's their MX24, $500 retail bike. I said, I want to take one to the track in a box. I want to build it at the track, and I want to race it at a national. And they're like, I love that idea. I'm like, let's do it. Do you want me to film it this way or this way? They're like, no, we're going to send a team. We're going to do it right. And so they waited till Nashville, the Music City Nationals, which that year, 2022, was 447 motos. It was the biggest national ever. And I'm like, great. I picked this one to try this. And the video they did such a great job. Stephen Smith, who's an ex-pro BMXer, and now he's photographing all around. He did an amazing job. And I got to like do it and build it. I raced it. And it was just really cool to prove you can take an entry-level Redline bicycle. And I'm sure there's other brands you can too. And it performs, and it was a little heavier, but man, I got to it. The videos are great, and I won a couple motos with it. It was fun. Just wanted to touch on that because it's just so cool. And Redline backed me on it and really got behind me. And that was like, I think that's one of my favorite achievements is living that dream that I wanted to do that. My 20 inch is a carbon fiber Flight Pro double XL Redline. Of course, with, you know, that you just build up, you know, like carbon fiber forks, and you know, actually I have the old Redline flight cranks, the hollow ones, which are great. And the bike just rides great. It's super quick. I don't need to have like all the latest titanium stuff, but you know, I just ride it, and it's probably not the best components that ever were made, but it rides beautifully, and I really enjoy riding.
Do you prefer carbon or what do you call it, chromoly, or whatever's aluminum?
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, I ride the carbon fiber frame because Redline gave me the carbon fiber frame to ride and represent.
Yes, sir.
But I could get back on one of my aluminum flight frames that I used to race like in 2014.
Yeah.
I think it's just as fast. There's a little flex in aluminum, they say, but they feel the same to me. Carbon wheels, aluminum rims, all that stuff. I think it's, for me, it's cool factor. You know, to have a carbon frame or carbon wheels or that fancy stuff, it's cool factor. The bikes, I don't think, are that much faster, especially at 58 years old.
Okay, here's my question to you on Redline. And I find this interesting because it's got to be cool at 58 years old to have such an iconic sponsor. And I've literally had people that run companies that tell me they just don't see the need to have an older person on their team. And I never can quite figure that out, because if you look at BMX, we are the staple of BMX. So I'm curious, how does it feel to have a great sponsor at 58 years old?
Well, it's amazing. And, you know, to anybody, I've never had anybody say that to me. I wish they would, because I would very easily say, okay, first of all, let's look at the slogan for Redline. It all starts on a red line. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that goes, oh man, I remember my first bike was a Redline. My first real race bike was a Redline. I hear it all the time. I see little kids, even at Grands, on 10, 12, and 15-year-old Redline bikes. Their first bike was a Redline because they buy them used. So if you think about it, branding and getting bikes sold, who's at the track that's setting examples? A 13-year-old expert? No, he's training, trying to win races. He's not talking to the little kids. And I'm sure we're going to touch on this a little bit, but yep. I'm at two tracks. I'm the league coordinator for Racing League at two tracks. I do announcing at two tracks. I do coaching and mentoring at two tracks. And I am first line with the new families, with the young kids. And of course, what are they going to do? What kind of bike does Papa G have? I want a red line also.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Redline did it that way, or I was just the last guy standing and said, hey, I don't care if you pay me as a full factory. I love the brand and what you stand for and the history. And I'm going to just keep plugging. But it worked out because I'm one of the first people they meet at the track, and it becomes that brand loyalty with them as well. They want to ride what I ride, regardless of my performance. You know, we gel, and it's just such a great family. Yeah.
No, you just touched on it, because that was my next question. I wanted to talk to you about my next area of BMX is you are heavily involved in your local area with BMX. Two tracks, like you said, but there's one that you started.
Yes. Yeah. So when I came back, I was at St. Peter's BMX. I still consider that my home track. It's my family there. And I'm there like 3-4 days a week sometimes, you know, maintenance, doing clinics or whatever, doing Racing League, and I do the announcing there. But, you know, St. Louis County, that's in St. Charles County, which, you know, it's on the outskirts of St. Louis, let's say.
Yeah.
But St. Louis, in general, the city and county, the metropolitan area, hasn't had a track since 1987. And so a couple people started like looking and talking about opening another track. And so at the time, my new friend, Johnny Murdoch, who is an ex-pro racer out of Texas, transplanted to St. Louis, started talking to the city of Sunset Hills because he had some history with them doing like car shows. And so he talked to them and said, hey, how about a BMX track? And they're like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. And so he pulled me in. We started pitching to City Hall and ramped them up about getting kids off the couch and the kids that don't fit into stick and ball sports. And they were like, let's go. Yeah. And so it was right, I guess it was late 2018 and then into early 2019, right as everything started getting shut down, that they were going to approve us. And we ended up getting approved fall of 2019 to build the track. And they gave us a spot in the park. And so I'm like just going nuts. I've never been involved. I've never been at an opening day at a BMX track.
Yeah,
I've never been involved in building a BMX track. So I was just like, I can't believe this is like a dream come true. Just amazing.
Okay. I'm curious. You touched on it just a second ago. I'm curious of how difficult it is to move dirt. I mean, to build a BMX track. Because the reason I'm asking is you've got to go through design. You've got to have the dirt. You've got to have the machines. You've got to have the volunteers. That's who's coordinating all of that. And how difficult was it to get all that together to finally see the opening day?
It's funny you say that because we kind of did it. I don't want to say unorthodoxly, but for the first part of the while, it was just Johnny and myself and maybe a couple other volunteers. We were restricted because it's on a floodplain, as are almost every track. But to the point where the Army Corps of Engineers said, we can't bring in outside dirt. We had to be approved to bring it in from a neighboring golf course, like on the other side of a little like a freeway.
Yeah.
And so I learned to operate a skid steer. And for 3 weeks, I dug mounds out of a golf course and handpicked the dirt. A buddy of mine brought his dump truck from work. He would load it, run it over the track. Johnny would scoot it around. And so we did that for 3 weeks, gathering dirt. And it was all on our own budget. The city didn't give us any money. We did run a fundraiser to like, you know, buy gate equipment, but that was all done with our debit cards, fuel. And luckily the city of Sunset Hills let us use their skid steer. So 3 weeks of rental would have been just crushing. It would we'd have been a year out. And we got all the dirt. I called USA BMX, called Billy Allen, because a new track, you're allowed to get one free build. And so Billy came down and scouted everything. And it was so funny, Todd. We were so innocent. We had the whole footprint of the track, 6 feet tall piles of dirt. And we thought, man, we've got so much dirt. He came down and he looks and goes, you're not going to have enough dirt.
Wow.
And we're, so we go back to harvesting more. And so he came down, Fabic, which is a local Caterpillar dealership. One of my clients from real estate is like a VP, and he donated one of those big loaders for Billy to build the track. So again, that's like $6,000 in rental fees or more.
Yeah.
So Billy put the whole track together. We kind of gave him a wish list of what we wanted. We wanted to contrast the other track in St. Peter's. So when kids come to each track, they learn different skills. And so, you know, we got to give him a wish list, and he did pretty much everything we wanted to do. And, it was rough because it's all dirt, you know, and we don't have like a concrete starting hill and paved turns. It's an all dirt track, but it was a lot of work. It was a whole lot of work, but it was so much fun.
Did you tack it?
No.
Really?
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because it floods a lot. And flooding will lift the glue up. Yeah, we're not at the point yet. When we get it raised up enough where we feel like a minor downpour won't affect it, we might start gluing. And we do have plans right now for paving the starting hill. As soon as the asphalt plants open up, we've got enough money together for that. So we're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay. So I've got to ask this in the sense of, you went through all that work, all of you guys. What was that feeling when the first gate fell?
Unbelievable. I remember that day so well. And we opened up, but ended up getting opened by the fall. We kept getting hit with, you know, weather, and it could. And I remember, I think we've had maybe like 10 or 11 motos. And I remember Johnny ran and grabbed me, and we did like selfies out with the camera. Here goes the first gate. And both of us are like, you know, it was just tears of joy. Couldn't believe we finally got the gate to drop and got a sanctioned USA BMX race. It was really emotional, really, really amazing.
Wow. So what do you got? How long have you guys been open, and what type of motos are you averaging?
Okay. So we just started our fourth season.
Congrats.
And thankfully the weather warmed up early in St. Louis. So we have 3 weeks of racing in already.
Nice.
And we're averaging like 13 motos right now.
Yeah.
Like, 12 to 16. And it's still so early in the year, you know, people aren't getting out yet. It was a little chilly at some nights, but we're hoping for a really good year. Lately, we had had a kind of a really shy moto count, because two state qualifiers in a row. One year, the track, the day before our state qualifier, a water main broke and flooded the track, 2 feet of water. And St. Peter's BMX was graceful enough to have let us have it at their track that day, and we moved it. And then the next year during practice, it rained like cats and dogs right in the middle of practice, and we had to move it again. So last year was our first actual state qualifier, and that was really awesome to have that volume there. And so hopefully it's starting to build up the confidence again of the track. You know, the local confidence is like, oh, it's an all dirt track. They're always flooded. They don't understand how much work goes into it. So, you know, they're getting there.
Okay. So going from, let's say, averaging about 13 motos to a state race, 80 to 100 motos, how did the track handle it?
Oh, fantastically. A lot of volunteers like really rose to the occasion.
Good.
Again, because we're a kind of a shoestring track there at Sunset Hills. The track was packed in. It rode well. Everything just worked. I think we had actually had to cancel it twice before we actually had it, because the weather was so bad.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to move it to the other track. And so by the time we got it done, I think we had about 54 motos. We missed out on the 80 moto count, but it was still awesome. And it was fun. You know, I get to announce, so I have so much fun announcing and trying to pump up the riders and, you know, watch them experience a different track with, you know, Midwestern dirt turns, because all the tracks around here have paved or the concrete turns.
Yeah.
So that's cool for them to experience it.
Do you get much time to ride the track, being a track operator?
So not as much as I probably should. So at St. Peter's, I like run the practices, run the gates. At racing, I'll say, hey, throw me in if you need somebody. Not as much. I mean, I used to try to get in. I've even been known to tuck the microphone in my helmet and race while announcing.
Are you serious?
The kids love that. And I talk smack. Oh, and I talk smack too. It's funny as hell. You know, it depends on the season. Last season, not as much as I have liked to, but yeah. You know, they're putting these minimums in to get these many races in. Yeah. So now I'm like, I've really stepped it up. And this year, if I get back on the track, I'm going to have to really, you know, because now it's your results as well as the number of races, from what I understand. So, and it's crazy because the newer track is only like 8 minutes from my house. So I can technically go there whenever I want and just ride the track, but I'm always busy doing other things. And once in a while I find time to work. And then there's the other track at St. Peter's BMX. I have a passion for that as well.
Okay. It just popped in my head. So I have to ask you this. Is the track open or is it behind gates? I'm curious because I a lot of tracks nowadays, when I was growing up, you could just ride out to Richfield, Taft Park, Richfield track in Minneapolis at Richfield. Yeah. And ride the track. Nowadays, that's not the case. Is your track open or is it behind a gate?
They're both tracks are fenced and you can only ride on the sanctioned days. Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And the Illinois track that's about an hour from here, Brighton, Illinois, they were open for a long time. I used to take my boys out there. We'd practice. We'd shoot off model rockets. We'd have a lunch. And even they've had to fence it in. I think from what I understand, if the park insurance won't cover the track, USA BMX says it's got to be fenced. And so the ones that were remaining open, I think the park had separate insurance and a lot of the parks don't want it anymore. It's just too much risk for them.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
So, yeah. It's gated. And so it's not open to the public except for practice and racing.
Okay. Talk to me about the league racing that you got started. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So it started when I was at St. Peter's BMX because we didn't have Sunset Hills open yet. But we actually, and I say we, but the track operator there, Mike Demon, had put it off for like 2 years. And Donnie Robinson and Mike Carruth had started this. And they're like, yeah, you should really try it. You should really try it. And we really kind of put it off. And finally, I think I saw in the chat, hey, we're going to start, we're going to have a racingly open house. Who's volunteering? I'm like, oh, I'll be there. Why not? You know, my kids are all out of the sport. I'll be there to help. And I show up and Mike Demon, the track operator, says, Papa G, can you run it? He hands me the paperwork. Can you run it? And I'm like, it's in a half an hour. Okay. And so I don't get nervous in front of people and I speak in front of people, no problem. And so I just looked over the scripting and did an open house and we were off. I mean, it went so well. I think our first one, we had probably 40 some riders. We try to do two racing leagues a year because weather's always so funky. We've had as many as 56 riders. We have a great conversion. A lot of those riders now, some of them are experts, you know, from those years. So we're doing our sixth year of racing league at St. Peter's, and we're getting ready to start our third year of racing league at Sunset Hills.
Did you think getting back in the BMX that you would be this involved grassroots?
Not in a million years. No, I had no preconception. Like when I got back into it, you know, my nephew dared me to race. So then boom, I'm in it. And the kids really took to it and enjoyed it. And it's really weird because I didn't volunteer at all those years. I was so consumed with taking care of the kids that it wasn't until I started showing up the races by myself and I'm looking around going, I got nothing to do. Why am I not helping? So I started like helping with staging or raking or whatever I could. And then Mike Demon from St. Peter's BMX threw me into this role of being the league coordinator and it clicked. And, you know, I love kids and I love like just really gassing them up and pumping them up and getting the volunteers to do the same. And no one else wanted to do it. Like, you keep doing it. We don't want that role. And so it just kind of stuck. And it's really awesome because I just get to see. The biggest one, Todd, is when parents come to me and they go, what did you do to my kid? And I'm like, what did I do? They're like, it was raining the other day and he's riding the bike in circles around the garage saying, when can we go back to the track? And my kid has never been excited about a sport or their daughter. They've tried football, baseball, basketball, all those team sports, never liked any of them. They are completely like hook, line, and sinker in BMX. And that just puts the biggest smile on my face to see the kids enjoy that individual progression, the confidence we put into them. We celebrate them, win, lose, or draw. Just, you know, just finishing a lap is a celebration. They did it right. USA BMX and Donnie Robinson. And I still talk with Donnie all the time with, we have a dream team here, a Donnie Robinson dream team. But they did it right. And they did the exact perfect formula to take beginners, introduce them to the sport the right way without the fear of showing up at a practice with a bunch of expert kids, and the kids just thrive. It's so awesome. And the adults, we have usually a parent group of anywhere from 5 to 9 riders. Yeah. Parents that get after it. It's awesome.
Not bad. How many of those kids transfer into racing full time?
Yeah, you know, I think we at times have seen as much as like 30-something% conversion.
That's pretty good.
Maybe as it's really strong. And maybe as little like 15%, depending what year it is. But yeah. It's been really good. We've had and those families that converted are like still in it. And like now they're traveling to nationals. We've even had some like their first year, like I'm going to national, which is too soon, but they're loving it. So really good response, really good conversion. And, you know, you can't expect all of them just to like dive all the way in, but it's pretty strong.
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah. Where do you see your track in the next 5 years?
The newer one, Sunset Hills BMX.
Yes. Yep. Sunset Hills.
Well, you know, I really push hard locally to be, it's like, we want it to be a BMX community. It's not, you know, is Sunset Hills doing better than St. Peter's BMX or better than Brighton? Cause Brighton's so close. We considered part of like the bi-state area tracks. It isn't so much, you know, can we get it to that level? Is can both of our tracks or all three of our tracks grow the sport and get more riders? And that's so important to me. And, you know, other families got caught up in a little bit of drama and, you know, we heard that this track does this and this track does that. And I'm like, no, we're all family. And when I'm at St. Peter's BMX, I talk up the other track. When I'm at Sunset Hills, we talk up the other track on social media. We try to promote each other. It's really a great relationship. 5 years from now, I hope to see Sunset Hills BMX be everything that the people want it to be. And what I mean by that is they're a little bit concerned with the dirt turns because they're slippery and everything. But when you go to a national race on indoor, those turns are dirt. You go to grands, they're dirt. Now they're packed way better than ours, but I want them also to learn how to race on dirt because the southern states have dirt turns still, like Southwest California tracks. So, you know, I think we'll eventually, because of maintenance, pave all our turns. But yeah. I want it to be of the caliber and of the feel and of the environment that they feel it's everything they should be getting.
Not bad.
That's my goal.
How long do you plan to continue racing?
I get asked that all the time. My kids are always like, Dad, when is enough enough? Especially after this last injury. And it's very simple. I will keep doing it until it's no longer fun for me. Simple. You know, as long as I'm having fun and I'm enjoying it, whether I'm riding, mentoring, coaching, doing racing, when it stops being fun and it feels like a chore, that's probably when I'll hang it up. So I think probably like 80, 85. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I do enjoy it so much. I don't see it. And especially with the new age groups, they keep, you know, this past year was the first for 56 and over expert.
Yeah.
They just now it's 66 and over cruiser.
Yeah.
And there's riders showing up. And there's riders coming back from retirement out of pro. I mean, it's totally a legitimate age group, and it's very competitive and exciting to watch. You know, we've been referred to like the 56 and over expert as one of the most exciting motos to watch at Grants.
Yeah,
because you have such skilled, smart riders that are jockeying, and there's lead changes, and there's moves being made, and once in a while you'll see a crash like mine. But it's a very exciting, viable age group. So I'm still in it. I still enjoy the hell out of it.
Do you see yourself coming back this year?
I certainly hope so. I like I said, I've I've made a couple laps on the track.
Yeah.
My knee is really stiff with scar tissue, which is probably my biggest limitation range of motion wise. I definitely will be racing locals this year. I don't know if I'll be at the level where I can race nationals. And, you know, you start getting under the gun where, you know, you've got to make so many nationals to show up to grands. And the thought of skipping grands would just break my heart. So my goal is to be back racing. I just don't know. It's still so up in the air. I just take it day by day.
Okay. Papa G, my last question to you is this. Do you feel blessed? Yes or no? And why?
Oh, without a question, Todd, I am so blessed. And it's what we just touched on for the kids. I've been so fortunate and so blessed to be put in the position to bring new riders into the sport by way of BMX Racing League, by way of like kind of track ambassador, because I'm such a chatty Cathy that when new families come, like, oh, go talk to Papa G. He'll dial you in. And that is such an amazing opportunity to have that role. And, you know, as well as being a Redline brand ambassador and a Redline rider, kids coming up, even old guys going, man, I remember I always wanted a Redline. And I love having those talks with those people and sharing my involvement as a kid and I still have my original bike. And hey, I can help you get a Redline bike. You're kidding, no way. And, you know, I still communicate with them across the country and actually across the world. Like one of my buddies now in Japan, I sent him some bikes. He started Redline Bicycles Japan. I mean, that started on a conversation that same way. So incredibly blessed, Todd, to be put in this position to motivate people. I love just pumping people up. And if I can change one day in somebody's life, man, I'm doing the right thing. And so I'm always trying to make a difference, whether they're kids or adults or families in BMX, especially that's what I want to do.
Papa G, I want to say thank you for coming on the Lane 8 BMX podcast. You're a blessing, man. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Todd. It was awesome, man. Best of luck to you and hope to run into you very soon.
You got it.